Speaking on this program is Bill Boyd.
Ephesians 4, verses 1 through 6. And we'll be talking about the first three of those verses. Let's remember what the book of Ephesians is about. Paul had spent some time there in Ephesus. He'd been preaching, and this preaching of Paul had gotten to the Gentiles, and the Gentiles had come into the church and were now worshiping with the Jews in God's church as Christians. And yet there was a long history of animosity between the Jews and the Gentiles. Now in chapter 1, he's talking about the blessings we have in Christ. And as he starts going through those blessings, he comes to verse 11. He's saying the blessings we have, and then he says, and you also. And he's talking about those Jews. You have those same blessings. And he's emphasizing that to them. You go to chapter 2, verses 11 through 13, and he zeroes in on this. How that at one time these Gentiles were afar off and aliens. But now they're fellow citizens with the saints. Fellow heirs. Fellow members. Fellow partakers of His promise. Added to that one great temple as a habitation of God through the Spirit. And the first three chapters are dealing with those great doctrinal things that in doing this, it explains to us what it means to be a member of the Church of Christ. What it means in God's eyes, what you are in God's eyes as a member of His church. And so it's a great doctrinal study. But then, in chapter 4, he begins to move from these great concepts of the mind to the attitudes of the heart and the application that it has to do in how we are to live. And so, the poor way that we explain this a lot of times is say, that's the doctrinal part and this is the practical part. Now, the problem is it's all doctrine. Doctrine is teaching. And none of it is impractical, all right? So don't take those words for the wrong meaning. But there's a doctrinal part of the book of Ephesians. And with this chapter now, we're beginning in the practical part where we can look at our lives. It says, now how does that mean how I should do in the way that I'm going to live in regards to these things that we have been taught? And so we'll be spending some time in Ephesus then looking on those things. Let me tell you a little fairy tale. It wouldn't be about fairies, but just a little make-believe tale. And we all have to kind of imagine this because we don't live in a land where we've got a king. But let's just imagine there's a kingdom and you're one of the serfs in that kingdom. You're just one of the folks and here's the king and you're just one of these common people. And yet one day the soldiers come to your door and they say, the king has spotted you. And the king has chosen you. And he wants to adopt you into his family. And he wants you to be a joint heir with him and to share with you his glory. Now, knowing that, you need to walk worthy of that. Because now you're the king's brother. You're in the king's family. Now, how would you walk? If you heard something like that, wouldn't that make you want to make sure you had a nice set of clothes that would really stand out? I tell you, you'd want to put those shoulders back and hold that chest up, stand up straight and be seen. Look people right in the eye and get that chin up and walk like that man. I'm in the king's family. Well, what do men think when they think about being honored by the king? We've got an example of that in Esther, probably an extreme example. In Esther chapter 6, and it says in verse 6, Haman came in, and the king said unto him, what shall be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now Haman thought in his heart that whom should the king delight to honor more than myself? And Haman answered the king, for the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let royal apparel be brought, which the king used to wear. and the horses that the king rideth on, and the crown royal set upon his head, and let this apparel and his horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's noble princes, that they may array the man with all whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the streets of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Now, imagine this. Not the king, the King of Kings, and the Lord of Lords tells you that you have been chosen. And the King of Kings wants you to be in his family. You'll be a joint heir with him. And he wants to share with you his glory. And you are to walk worthy of that. Now, how would you walk? This is going to show the difference in a worldly kingdom and a spiritual kingdom. You need to remember as we think on these things that the Lord said in Proverbs 6, 16 and 17 that the Lord hates a proud look. And you want to walk worthy of the honor that the King has given to you. Tells us in Ephesians chapter 4, verses 1 through 6, to walk in lowliness and meekness and longsuffering and forbearance and love. Aren't those beautiful words? Isn't that a very different idea how it is to walk worthy? Let's look at those words. I want us to look at this passage and zero in on those lovely, lovely words and see what it means to be a Christian. Therefore. Alright, therefore. That's tying back to what he said. This is what it means to be a member of the Church of Christ. You've seen what it means in God's eyes. God, you know now, if you've listened and studied 1 through 3, what God thinks of you. Therefore, drawing from that, the prisoner of the Lord. Boy, doesn't that set the stage? I tell you, Paul was one of those. It did not result in Paul in earthly material blessings and the praise of this world. What did it wind up with Paul? He is a prisoner. He's a prisoner because of what he's doing for the Lord. He's a prisoner because he is a Christian and living that life that God wants him to live. As he had said earlier, that he is a prisoner for your sakes in Ephesians chapter 3 and verse 1. It's because of the very things he had done for them. He's now in a Roman prison. Wouldn't that, if you knew you were getting a letter from a man that was in a distant prison and he's there because of what he's been doing for us, wouldn't that make you want to listen to what he's saying? I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you. That word beseech, it's a word of exhortation. The book I looked at said it's an exhortation that is warm and personal and urgent. When Paul uses that word, I beseech you, he's appealing to the very best part of our natures. I beseech you to walk. Want to write another word in there? Write the word live. That's what walk's talking about. This is the way that we are to live when it says the way we are to walk. To walk worthy. You see, the way we live should be a reflection of the things that we've been taught about God and about Christ and about His church. Our lives should conform. Our lives should be such that it brings honor and glory to those teachings that we have received. In Titus chapter 2 and verse 1, Paul tells Titus to speak thou those things that become sound doctrine. It doesn't mean that you say them and they turn into sound doctrine. It's those that are becoming the sound doctrine. They're fitting the sound doctrine. And he starts talking about the way we're supposed to live, and we're supposed to live in a way that is becoming to the sound doctrine. That's healthy doctrine, healthy lives. They go together. I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called. That word vocation in the King James Version, it's not a wrong translation. It has to do with that which is voiced, actually. But it'd probably be better translated for us to walk worthy of the calling wherewith ye are called. Because the Greek words calling and called there are right together. It's just different forms of that same word. To walk worthy of that calling wherewith you are called. I started getting my concordance out and looking up that word called and looking up that word calling. And you know, we could spend the rest of this morning and not get past that one word about what the Bible teaches about calling. Galatians 1 and verse 6 tells us we're called by the gospel of Christ. It says in Philippians chapter 3 and verse 4, it's a high calling. Verse 14, Hebrews 3 and verse 1, a heavenly calling. 2 Peter 1 and verse 3, we're called to glory and virtue. And we're to walk worthy of that calling. And then here we get into these words. Number one, with all lowliness. That word translated here, lowliness, has in it the word mind. It's a word that has to do with how we think, particularly about ourselves. And probably a fuller translation this with lowliness of mind. It's what the Lord is talking about as He begins the Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 3. Blessed are the poor in spirit. The poor in spirit are those of a lowly mind. Now, that's not to say that I'm no account and I'm no good and be down on yourself. That's not what it's talking about. But it is talking about warning about not thinking of yourselves higher than you ought to think. In Romans chapter 11 and verse 17, he's talking to the church at Rome that had problems with this and problems out of the Gentiles of thinking too much of themselves. And the illustration here is of an olive tree. And the natural branches are the Jews. And because they rejected the gospel, those natural branches are broken off. And the branches from the wild olive tree are the Gentiles. And because the Gentiles have obeyed the gospel, well, those wild branches are grafted in. And then he has this warning. He says in verse 18, boast not against the branches, but if thou boast, thou bearest not the root, but the root thee. Well, if thou say, the branches were broken off that I might be grafted in. Well, because of unbelief they were broken off, and thou standest by faith, be not high-minded, but fear. Now, that's the opposite word. Lowliness of mind and high-minded. If God spared not the natural branches, take heed lest He spare not thee. Behold, therefore, the goodness and severity of God on them which fell, severity, but toward thee, God's goodness. If thou continue in His goodness, otherwise thou also shall be cut off. And they also, if they shall abide in unbelief, shall be grafted in. For God's able to graft them in again. For if thou wert cut out of the olive tree, which is wild by nature, and were grafted in contrary to nature into a good olive tree, how much more shall these, which be the natural branches, be grafted into their own olive tree? For I would not, brethren, that ye should be ignorant of this mystery, lest ye should be wise in your own conceits. So lowliness of mind. To walk worthy of God is to walk in lowliness of mind. I need to make sure we understand that the first thing Paul's talking about here as we get into this practical application is the unity among Christians. And he's talking about one of the things that we need to do to have this unity in our attitudes of our heart is lowliness of mind. One of my favorite quotes from Shakespeare comes from that play, measure for measure. You've heard me use this before. Man, proud man, dressed in little, brief authority, most ignorant of what he's most assured. His glassy essence, like an angry ape, plays such fantastic tricks before high heaven as to make angels weep. Pride is foolishness. This being about unity. You get a bunch of high-minded people together, and they're not going to get along. They're all going to think somehow everyone ought to be about them, and they're not going to be getting along with one another. And if we want to have the unity of the Spirit that Paul's talking about, we need to have lowliness of mind. Let's remember what he says in Ephesians 2, verses 8 and 9. By grace are ye saved through faith, and that not of yourselves. It is the gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. And so one of the characteristics of a church of Christ is to be that the members there are to have lowliness of mind. The Sermon on the Mount begins the same way this part of the book of Ephesians begins, with lowliness of mind. Let's go to this next word, meekness. Now, do not confuse meekness with weakness. I don't think anyone would ever dare say that Moses was a weak man, but in Numbers chapter 12 and verse 2, it says Moses was very meek above all men on the face of the earth. And that is said in the context of Moses going to God in prayer, asking for God's mercy on those who are jealous of him and are saying evil things against him. That's the context of what it means to be meek. What it's talking about when it's talking about meekness, it's talking about having your passions under control. I tell you what a meek man is not. A meek man is not one that flies off in anger and loses his temper. That's not the meek man. A meek man can control his tongue and control his temper. Matthew chapter 5 and verse 5 again, when the Lord said, blessed are the meek. That's what he's talking about. We're going to have the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. Then we're going to have a strong spirit of meekness. Long-suffering. Now, long-suffering is not just suffering. I mean, we all have to suffer one another, don't we? We just got to put up with each other. We're going to have to just suffer one another. But this has to do with long-suffering. That is, you just keep on suffering with one another over the long haul. That's what that's talking about. If we want to have the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace that God's church ought to have, we're going to be long-suffering with one another. Man that has a short temper is not long-suffering, is he? So we just got to put up with each other over the long term. We're not perfect. When I thought of that, I thought about what Paul talked to when he was talking to Timothy, telling him how to preach. In 2 Timothy 4 and verse 2, he says, reprove, rebuke, and exhort with all long suffering. And that means, Timothy, you need to be preaching this and just keep on preaching it and keep on preaching it and keep on preaching it. And if they criticize you unfairly, well, don't worry about that. Just keep on preaching it. And if they ignore it, well, just keep preaching it. And if they oppose it, just keep preaching it. Because sometimes it takes a long time for the Word of God to seep into the heart of man, and so you need to be long-suffering. And when we think of long-suffering, think about how we want God to treat us. We're going to make a lot of mistakes, and we want to receive and be benefits of the long-suffering of God. And then that's how we're to treat one another. We just stay with it and stay with it and stay with it and stay with it. With the attitude that we know one another, we're not all going to be perfect. We're all going to get our feelings hurt every now and then. And somebody's going to do things we don't approve of. But we need to have that attitude of heart of long suffering. And then it says forbearing one another. Now that sounds a lot like long suffering. And it is, but the word's a little bit different. It means to just keep holding on to one another. Actually, it means to hold one another up. And I wish I could explore that word further, because another way to look at that is that we're here to help each other. You remember that song, Lean On Me? I'll be your friend to help you carry on, because it won't be long. I'll need someone to lean on. When we gather together, we need to find folks that are here that are supportive of one another and help each other and will hold each other up in times of weakness and times of need and times of trial. We have that attitude. Why? We have the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. And that means that we need to assemble together. We need to be faithful in our attendance. And when we gather together, that's one of the ways we encourage one another. You want to discourage your brother? Just don't show up at the attendance. Just show up every now and then, or just show up on Sunday morning and don't come any other time, and it'll discourage. But it'll encourage. If you'll show up, and show up with the idea that that's why I'm coming, to give and to help one another, and help support one another and hold on to one another. Here's the text, Hebrews 10:24. Consider one another to provoke unto love and good works, not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, but exhorting one another. When we think about long suffering, and we think about forbearance, we need to remember Romans chapter 2 and verse 4 that tells us about the long suffering and forbearance of God, and that is called the riches of His goodness. So that's what we need to exhibit toward one another as well. And then it says in love. You know, Christ said love is the fulfilling of the law. Church of Corinth had a lot of problems, and one of the problems they had was they were torn by strife and division among them, and there was all kind of practical things they needed to do, but they had a problem in their hearts, and that was love, a lack of it. And that's why that Paul wrote that chapter on love in 1 Corinthians chapter 13. And he says, love suffereth long. Well, there's your long suffering. He says, love is not easily provoked. There's your meekness. It says, love beareth all things. There's your forbearance. And so if we're to walk worthy of the vocation wherewith we are called, we're going to love one another. And you just think about who he's writing to now. He's writing to Jews and Gentiles. Now, the very mention of the name Gentile in the presence of Jews can cause a riot. And the very mention of the word Jews in the presence of Gentiles can say, they would shout out, if you said Gentiles in the presence of Jews, when Paul said that, they said, away with such a man, is not fit for him to live. And yet he's bringing these folks together and saying, now you need to love one another. And if those Jews and Gentiles in the Ephesus could love one another, surely we ought to be able to love one another. 1 John 3 and verse 11. This is the message you've heard from the beginning, that you should love one another. 1 John 3 and verse 23. This is His commandment, that we should love one another. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 7. Beloved, let us love one another, for God is love. 1 John chapter 4 and verse 11. Beloved, if God so loved us, we ought also to love one another. Says in 1 John chapter 4 and verse 12, if we love one another, God dwelleth in us and His love is perfected in us. And so look at those words. Walk worthy of that vocation wherewith we are called. We're going to endeavor to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. That word endeavor means we're going to work at this. We're going to make sure that we're united. Now, there's a doctrinal part to this unity that we're going to be talking about when we talk about those next three verses. But this time, let's talk about those attitudes of heart. And there to be lowliness and meekness and long-suffering and forbearance and love. Psalm 133, there's a hymn to unity. how good and how pleasant it is for brethren to dwell together in unity. Christ prayed in John chapter 7 and verse 21 that we're to be united and that the world, so that the world might believe, we're to be one so that the world might believe that God hath sent me.